Hey, welcome in, and it is time for episode 11 of the Cumming and Gillespie LLP Flames Alumni Chronicles. Welcome aboard. It's Pat Steinberg along with you, and this week in the spotlight, Dana Merzen. We've got a great hour ahead. Cumming and Gillespie LLP, personal injury and medical malpractice lawyers committed to getting maximum compensation for the injured and their families. Visit CummingGillespie.com. Yeah, Dana Merzen, who played 201 games as a member of the Flames, won a Stanley Cup with them in 1989. We've got lots of great stories to come in the next hour with Brent Cron and Colin Patterson, your hosts, and Dana Merzen, your guest of honor. And we'll jump into the conversation in just a second, but first it's time for This Week in Flames History, brought to you by Village Honda. And this week we're going back 21 years ago. We're taking you back to June 3rd of 2004.
Aguila picks it up and leaves it. Here's Nilsson coming in again in the high slot, turns back the blue line, no shot in there, hard around the net, so Pekin got it back.
Oh, man, what a night that was here in Calgary. First, it was the shift from Jarome Iginla, and then Oleg Saprykin scored the overtime winner as the Flames won Game 5 of the Stanley Cup Final 3-2 over the Tampa Bay Lightning 21 years ago this week, June 3rd, 2004. Saprykin scored the game winner at 14:40 of overtime to give Calgary not only a 3-2 win, but a 3-2 series lead. Of course, we all know they would go on to lose that series in 7, but boy, for that 24-48 hours, the elation in Calgary with the Flames being a win away from the Stanley Cup, it was palatable. That was 21 years ago this week, and that is This Week in Flames History, brought to you by Village Honda, your dealership for life in the Northwest Auto Mall. Okay, let's dive into the conversation. This week, it is former Flames defenseman Dana Merzen in conversation with Brent Cron and Colin Patterson. And lots of roots in Calgary for Dana Merzen. He grew up in Calgary, Western Canada guy. Let's get into the conversation right now.
You're a Calgary guy, right? Kinda?
Kinda.
Yeah.
Born in Regina.
Yeah.
Lived out east. Ottawa. Well, Toronto when I was really young, Ottawa till I can start remembering things, and back to Regina.
Okay.
Moved to Calgary in 1980, going into grade 9.
Ah.
So like 14.
Why did you move around so much?
Dad was working for the federal government. That's the first job I remember.
Yeah.
And then my grandparents were getting older.
Yep.
So he took a job with the provincial government in Saskatchewan so we could all be close to parents and help out.
Yep.
And we were there 3 years, and then they gassed that department. Then it was 1980, and we moved to Calgary. Foothills Pipeline Yukon Limited, I think the company was called. There was about 600 employees. We were here 3 months, and that's when that crash started.
Yeah.
So they went from 600 employees to 570, and my dad wasn't one of the 30 left. So then he bumped around a little bit, but we were here. So
yeah. And so when did you start playing hockey?
I think I was about 5 years old in Ottawa, and it was just like outdoor ice.
Yeah.
And then I remember my first year of, like, I'll say organized hockey was when you play cross ice.
Yep.
3 games.
Thank you. Yep.
Started that up in Ottawa. And that's where it all got started.
Huh. Were you always a defenseman? Were you always a defenseman? When I was playing minor hockey, I didn't start playing minor hockey until I was 9 or 10.
Right.
And then when I started playing, I couldn't skate very well, but my parents put me in skating lessons, which turns out to really be figure skating without figure skates. I had to wear hockey skates, and I had this unitard on with sparkles on it. My mom still has it. She wears it around. Like, it's amazing. I want to burn that thing.
The old unitard.
The old unitard, yeah, like the old Andre the Giant unitard with the one shoulder strap. People will know what I'm trying to get at, right?
You know? Yeah, you bet.
It's just a visual.
Yeah, exactly, right? Yeah. And so I remember my first year playing minor hockey, I just stand beside the goalie. That's all I would do. And then they wouldn't let, it's not that they wouldn't let me play, but they already had a goalie. So every time I go back there, I just, well, like eventually you're just going to have to put this idiot in net somewhere because he's not doing anything else, right?
Yeah.
And that's how I legitimately became a goalie. So, I mean, like, you look, you've been a defenseman your whole life, no?
Well, you know what? When you're real young, they just kind of mix you up.
Yeah, for sure.
But that's like, I don't even remember that. But I think probably just because of my size. When I was younger, I was a pretty big kid. They tend to.
Yeah.
You know, I could have, maybe I could have been the first Eric Lindros if they would have put me at center. You never know, exactly. But.
Yeah.
No, I don't think I did the old figure skating, power skating, all that when I was younger too.
Yeah.
But I only remember really playing defense.
Yeah. Okay. Well, and then you played in the AJHL for the Canucks.
I actually played for both teams at the time. There was only two. There was the Spurs and the Canucks.
Yeah.
Started out with the Canucks. There was a bunch of us younger players, Mitch Cornett, Bechtold, a couple guys like that. And they switched affiliation at Christmas. So the Wranglers decided that, you know, the Canucks would no longer be their farm team. They switched over to the Spurs.
Yeah.
So they worked out a 5-for-5 trade. And I think back then you could have 3 20-year-olds on your team.
Yeah.
So all the 20-year-olds came to the Canucks and all the 16, 17-year-olds or whatever went to the Spurs. We were first place. No, that... How'd it work? Canucks were last place at Christmas, first place at the end of the year.
Yep.
After they acquired all of us kids for the Spurs, we went from first place to last place. So I think at that age, it does matter.
Yeah. When they broke the news that everything with your world was changing, were people in uproar, or did it even matter?
No,
I think that's the way it is, right?
I don't think it mattered. It wasn't a big deal.
So then you get to the Wranglers.
Yep.
That's at the Corral, right?
Yep.
The boards were still pretty high, and then the glass was even a little bit, it was small glass, but the boards were pretty high. I mean, you get hit in there, and your hip would get taken out because the boards were so high, or no?
The boards were very high.
Yeah.
Which I kind of liked, actually.
You didn't mind, yeah.
But the best was the bench had like lower seating, and then on the two ends it had two kind of upper seats.
Yeah.
And so I looked at it before they tore it down because I used to jump from that back bench all the way onto the ice for my shift.
Yeah.
And I was kind of thinking of trying it just for fun, but I didn't want to break my ankle. But no, that was a fun barn.
Yeah, that was incredible seating on the bench.
Oh yeah.
Full barn too when you were playing. Was it pretty rocking in the Corral? Or
okay, so
you could smoke in the arena too, couldn't you? When you played,
I might not be that old, but I'm not as old as Laddie. Like, come on.
Yeah.
But what was going on was the Flames that came to town and they were playing out of the Corral.
Yep.
So my first year junior, they were offering an incentive that if you bought a Wrangler season ticket, after they had offered the tickets to the current Flames season ticket holders for the Sal Dome, if you were a Wrangler season ticket holder, you got next pick.
Oh.
So yes, my first year, I thought, this is phenomenal. Like, out of the 5,000 seats or whatever, we'd probably have 4,000 people there. The other 1,000 just bought the tickets so they could get Flames tickets later.
Yeah.
But it was a little deflating. It was a little deflating when the Flames moved into the Sal Dome because I think we averaged about 180 people per game.
Oh, yeah.
And then, well, and then the team ended up leaving for a while. So,
yeah.
You know, it's good to see you back in town, though, that's for sure.
You know,
where'd the team go? They go to Billings?
Swift Current. Back then, they went Swift.
Oh.
Or perhaps Lethbridge. I think I'm wrong. I think they went Lethbridge first because I remember Mark Tenorti was challenging my goal scoring record as a defenseman at 32 goals.
Yeah.
He had 31 going in the last game of the year,
yeah,
and he didn't score.
Yeah,
and I think that was down in Lethbridge.
Well, you know, not only you being a defenseman, getting the odd shift on the wing, 92 points, you coupled that with 233 penalty minutes. And you know, we've chatted with Theo, and he said his last year with the Warriors, he had 200 and some odd penalty minutes too, and he just said divide those by two because all it was spearing and slashing and cross-checking penalties.
Yeah.
The bulk, if you're 233, what would they have been for?
Well, there would have been a bunch of that, but there's quite a bit of fighting.
Yeah?
Like that's the only year of my life that I actually think I enjoyed hockey fights.
Yeah.
And it goes back to that same thing. When you're 18 years old and been in the league already a year, you're physically catching up, and all the guys that beat you up are retired or gone pro or wherever their next stage is. And it's a little easier to beat guys up or fight them when they're a little younger than you. I actually had fun that year.
You owned the league is what you were saying.
Well, I didn't own the league because we had the Dave Mansons and the Churlas and Baumgartners and Wendell Clark and Joey Kosher. Oh, so there was lots of guys that were very capable.
Yeah.
But you're too young and dumb to know any different.
Did you ever fight Manson in junior?
No.
Who, any big names you you?
So I always used to fight Joey Kosher.
Yeah.
We'd have to go back and look. I never fought Churls, I don't think. But Joey, what would happen is I would fight Joey Kosher, and my partner Kenny Spangler would end up fighting Wendell Clark. And it was pretty much every time we played the Blades that happened. So. Yeah. So, you know, when you fast forward 10 years and you're playing pro, and Joey's made he became a little better at that than me. That leads into a good story because we were playing in Detroit once. I was with the Flames. And we were up 5-2. There's like 3 minutes left in the game. And I'm standing on the blue line. And I'm like, holy shit, here comes Joey.
Yeah.
Like, what's he doing? And he starts shaking his gloves like 40 feet from me. And I'm going, what is this all about? So he keeps coming. So drop my gloves and we grab on and I go, Joey, what the hell's going on?
Yeah.
And he says, Hank, there's 3 minutes left in the game. I played a minute and a half. I got to do something. We're losing 5-2. Just make it look good, will you? So it was the most confusing, somewhat, I'll say it wasn't necessarily a fight. He goes, throw a couple, make it look good. You know, it's like I hadn't had a guy talk me through a fight against him yet, but it was great.
WWF.
Yeah.
Right?
We shared a few laughs about that when Joey came played in Vancouver.
We could both
remember it, and it was that's fun stuff.
Oh, that's so good. You were a first round draft pick.
Yes.
Fifth overall, the Hartford Whalers.
Yeah.
Is that accurate?
Yes. And
did you know you were going to go to Hartford?
No, I didn't have a clue. So the draft year was fun. Like you said, I had the stats and things went well. Our team still wasn't great, but. I remember going to the draft and got interviewed by a few teams.
When you said going to the draft, where was the draft then? Or
Toronto.
Toronto.
It was the first year I think they moved out of Montreal, if I remember correctly. And so went to Toronto. Donnie Meehan, Donnie Goodstuff was my agent.
Donnie Goodstuff.
And he was.
Why'd you call him Donnie Goodstuff?
I don't know. That was just the name.
I'd
that
never
everyone...
heard that before. I'd met Donnie when I was 16, 17 years old.
Yeah.
Adult Donnie Goodstuff.
I honestly don't know where it came from, but that's what we all called him. And he also represented Wendell and a bunch of other players. So they fly down the draft and brought my parents. And we got there, I think, 2 days before the draft. And teams would schedule meetings with players that they were interested in talking to. So my first meeting was with the Toronto Maple Leafs, and and you're thinking, yeah, right, first pick overall.
Who was part of the, like, who was interviewing you, or who was the management?
Was it Jerry Meehan? Was there?
No.
McNamara.
Jerry McNamara.
Sorry. So it was kind of intimidating at the Harborfront Westin or whatever. You go up to whatever floor, you walk in this room, and there's a bunch of chairs, kind of in a row. Jerry's sitting in the middle. I believe it was Stelic. Gord Stelic was either assistant GM or had some position near that.
Yeah, yeah.
And they came in and everyone says, hi, and how you doing? And okay, it's great. You're all excited. And then the first question is, so son, we pick you first overall in the draft. We sign you to a big fat contract, but then you don't play for us. Where would you play? You know, would you go back junior? Would you go to the minors? What would your position on that be? And I basically said, I'd go play for the Olympic Canada hockey program.
Yep.
He says, son, you can't do that. I just told you. I signed you to a big fat contract. Now you're pro. So what would you do? And I did know that I could do this. I talked to Dave King back here in town. And he said, you know, he didn't think I would come back. But he says, if you do, we'd love to have you. I persisted with my answer that I would probably join the Olympic program, and he got a little bit irate with me.
Yep.
And then Gord stepped in and whispered in his ear, yeah, he can. And then he said, thanks very much for coming. And that was the end of the interview, and I got up and walked out, went, well, that didn't go very good.
Yeah, straight to Toronto for me.
Yeah. well, 8 year, 18 year old kid knew more about the process than an NHL GM. Go figure. So then the next day, the only two meetings I had was Toronto, and the next day I sat down with New Jersey.
Okay.
So that was a great meeting. You know, like we talked for about half an hour. Max McNabb, yes. So we talked for about half an hour. Everything was going great. And when I was leaving, one of their head scouts kind of patted me on the back and said, kid, if you're still available, number three, we're taking you. Yeah. So I walked out of there kind of like going, wow, this is pretty cool stuff. And, you know, you go back, you tell your parents and everything. And then fast forward, next day we're sitting at the draft. So we got Donnie in the middle and Wendell's on one side and I'm on the other, my parents and his parents. And Toronto has the first pick overall. They start the draft and Toronto calls time. They use their first time out of the draft before it started.
To check the rule on Team Canada.
They wanted to make sure. But it was funny because you just see the draft tables and all of a sudden everyone's grabbing their phones. Like, what are they calling time for? They want to make a trade? What do they want to do? Still don't know what they were thinking. But then they end up to take Wendell, which was, you know, that's a great pick.
They're probably thinking, does Clark have an E on it or no? Let me just check. Time out.
So he went first, and then Pittsburgh took Simpson, and they'd kind of made it known that if he didn't go to Toronto, they were taking him. So that was no
Simpson. Which Simpson?
Craig Simpson.
Craig Simpson.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So they take Craig, and now I'm sitting there with my parents, and it's third pick, and they told me, like, yesterday, I'm going to Jersey. Yeah. So, you know, you start getting a little excited, and then New Jersey Devils select Craig Willanen. And I'm kind of going, what? The guy told me yesterday I'd be going to New Jersey.
That liar.
You didn't give the old move, though, Hank, to stand up.
No, I stayed poker face. Yeah. It was my underwear that needed changing. So then next pick was Vancouver. I remember Donnie, my agent, turned me and said, you know, I know you want to go as high as you can, but it's probably best if you didn't go to Vancouver right now. Not a great franchise to get involved with. A little bit of turmoil, I think. I don't think Pat Quinn was there yet. If not, he was coming. But so they picked Jim Sandlack. Yeah. So it's the Hartford Whalers. To be honest with you, I didn't even know where Hartford was. I had no idea. I didn't
Hartford, America.
You know, you watch Hockey Night Canada once in a while when you're playing, but you're busy. And they picked me.
Yeah.
And it's funny. I went on the way down the table. I started recognizing all the scouts and the different people I'd seen over the year in Calgary, but I never knew who they were. And it's another McNabb. Is it Peter McNabb? But there's Dave McNabb. I think it was Dave McNabb was head of scouting. Yeah. And they were tickled pink. It was great. We picked Kay Whitmore as the first pick in the second round. And Ronnie Francis was there, our captain. So he took us out to all the fine establishments in Montreal and had a couple chains showed. As the bars closed, and that was that. The rest is history.
Emile Francis, he was a GM, right?
Yep. When I played junior, I ended up playing right defense, just the way it worked. So I got drafted. When I went to Hartford, Emile says, we're going to have a press conference tomorrow, announce your signing. This was the day before training camp. Because we all had to wait for Wendell to sign his contract, so that sets the benchmark. And so once Wendell signed, then they could slot us all in.
What did Wendell get for? Is that public knowledge or?
Well, I'm sure it is. Yeah. It's probably a bit more than what I got. I got 125 to sign.
Yep.
And it was a 4-year deal, 3 years and an option. It was 100, 105, 115, and an option at 115.
Yeah.
Two-way.
So there was no like entry level deal. Cap. It was like whatever they could sign you for 20 years if they wanted to. Just kind of kept.
Yep.
But they always waited for the number one to sign, and it just sort of flowed from there.
Yeah. When the best car establishes the price on the lot, then we can get to selling the other ones. So, Hartford was great. I love being there. The press conference, Emile says to me, we're going to go in the other room, Hank. He had a real strong New York accent, you know, shorter guy, great guy. Loved Emile. And he says, they're going to ask you three questions. First one's going to be your left shot D that played right through junior in the only spot, maybe left defense with the Whalers. How do you feel about that? And your answer's going to be, that would be just fine.
That would be just fine.
And then the next question was, do you expect to make the team this year?
Yeah.
And your answer will be, I'm going to do my best. That's what training camp's all about. I hope so.
Did he give you cue cards or no?
They were pretty straightforward questions. And I can't even remember what the third question was. I walk into the other room expecting like a press conference like you see on TV. Yeah. And we're at the Sheraton and there's like Jeff Jacobs and one TV camera and one other person. Jeff, he wrote for the Hartford Current. And it was like Emil must have gave him the questions and says, here's, because it was just like he just told me. I gave the answers. Everyone packed up and left. He said, well done, kids. See you Monday.
It's so good.
Yeah.
Why did they call you Hank?
Well, that's my dad's name's Henry.
Okay.
So he went by Hank for most of his life.
Yep.
And when I started playing there, I showed up at training camp. Kid from Western Canada wearing cowboy boots. And I chewed tobacco back then, so everyone assumed I came from rural Alberta. They didn't know I was the farthest thing from a farmer you could find or a cowboy. And so the All-Star game was in Hartford that year. So they flew my parents down. The team said, we'd love to fly your parents down and get you tickets to all the events and, you know, spend some time. And that was wonderful. So my parents came in the dressing room to meet the team. And everyone was expecting these two rural Albertans wearing, know, wearing their country gear and that's not my parents. They're just regular everyday
tennis
city
shoes,
people, you know. My dad had a suit on, whatever. So no one said anything. And then after they left, everyone looked at me and said, "What the hell? You look more like a Hank than your dad." And everyone started calling me Hank.
All right, we're just getting started with this week's conversation. It's Dana Merzen in the spotlight this week, and part two of the conversation coming up very shortly. As we continue along, it is time for this week's edition of Flames Trivia. It's brought to you by OSY Rentals. Make the best use of your oil field production budget. OSY's VaporTite package comes with everything required downstream of the wellhead. Call 1-855-OSY-TANK. And with Dana Merzen being the guest of honor this week, our trivia question is centered on him. So Dana Merzen was a fifth overall selection of the Hartford Whalers going back to the 1985 NHL draft. So Dana Merzen went fifth overall in 1985. I need to know who went number one overall that year in the 1985 NHL draft. Who was the number one overall selection in 1985? Give you a few seconds to think about it. Okay, the correct answer, see if you got this one right. It is Wendell Clark of the Saskatoon Blades was the first overall pick back in 1985, of course, selected by the Toronto Maple Leafs. That is Flames Trivia, brought to you by OSY Rentals, as we are just getting started on this week's edition of the program. It's Dana Merzen in the spotlight this week with part two around the corner. It's the Cumming and Gillespie LLP Flames Alumni Chronicles. Cumming and Gillespie LLP, personal injury and medical malpractice lawyers committed to getting maximum compensation for the injured and their families. Visit CummingGillespie.com. Part two with Dana Merzen is around the corner. Hey, welcome back as we continue along on this week's edition of the Cumming and Gillespie LLP Flames Alumni Chronicles. Cumming and Gillespie LLP, personal injury and medical malpractice lawyers committed to getting maximum compensation for the injured and their families. Visit CummingGillespie.com. My name is Pat Steinberg. This program available on the Flames Talk podcast feed, Apple, Spotify, Amazon, Seeker, or wherever you get your podcasts. And back to the conversation with this week's guest of honor, Dana Merzen, in just a minute. But first, it is time for this week's edition of Where Are They Now? Brought to you by Pure Chem Services. And this week, we're checking in on former Flame Steve Bozek. Now, he was a third-round pick of the LA Kings going back to the 1980 NHL draft, but was acquired by Calgary in June of 1983. He'd go on to play 261 games as a member of the Flames. He was known as the tallest man from Castlegar, BC. D.C. He now lives in Scottsdale, Arizona, where he works for a private equity firm. This week on Where Are They Now, Steve Bozek. And Where Are They Now, brought to you by PureChem Services, the expertise to realize higher production and lower costs. Okay, let's dive back into the conversation. It's part two with former Flames defenseman Dana Merzen. He's in conversation with Brent Cron and Colin Patterson. And hey, he jumped right to the NHL from junior. No time in the minors for Dana Merzen. That's where we pick up part two of the conversation right now.
You bypassed the minors, eh? What do you say? Did you say that when you were negotiating your contract? I'm not playing in the A or the I, or what happened there?
Back then, you didn't say much.
Just signed it.
You showed up. I just showed up and played. And I think what really helped me was Chris Kostopoulos was a defenseman for Hartford. And he got into a contract dispute during training camp. They hadn't signed him yet, and he wanted whatever he wanted.
Extra $2,500.
Yeah, what do you think? We are a bank.
But the thing with Emil Francis was he was big on loyalty. He was very straightforward. And you don't drag your crap out into public.
Right.
So this was behind door stuff, and Kostopoulos got pissed off. So he came out to the one reporter, Jeff Jacobs, that we had in Hartford, and said, this is bullshit. I'm an established pro, you know, whatever, whatever. And so the next day, we had our first exhibition games, and they do a rookie game, and then they do the real game.
Yeah.
And so I'm all excited. I'm thinking, good, I'm going to get my first rookie game in. This is all great. And I come back and check in the lobby. Well, holy shit, my name's not in the list. So I remember standing in the lobby going, well, this isn't great. Like, I guess, you know,
yep.
I'm not even in the rookie game. This is bad. And then I look over at the pro game, the 7:30 game. First name on the D list, Dana Merzen. Guess who was in the rookie game? Chris Kostopoulos. And I think he got dealt to Toronto within a week.
Yeah.
So now there's a vacant spot for Dana.
Yeah.
So I think they liked what they saw during training camp and thought it's worth taking a chance on the kid, and we'll get rid of Kotze.
Some of your teammates that first year, too. I mean, Sylvain Turgeon, Ray Ferraro, Ronnie Francis, 80-point guys that year.
Yeah, Kevin Dineen.
Kevin Dineen.
Did
there.
You say Ray Ferraro?
I did say Ray Ferraro.
Ray's there?
Yeah, Ray's there.
Ulfie Samuelson on defense.
Just looking at that, he had 80 games, 174 PIMs.
That was my defense partner.
Really?
Yeah.
What was it like playing with Ulfie Samuelson?
Oh, great. He was a good player.
Yeah.
But, you know, Ulfie was a class clown.
Yeah.
But he didn't realize, well, maybe he did, but I ended up taking the beatings for all of his shenanigans on the ice.
Yeah.
And I remember once when Proby got out of his first stint out of rehab.
Bob Probert, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's pretty obvious.
Bob Probert got out of back and they're playing in Hartford and the game's going fine and Proby's minding his own business and, you know, I'm thinking good. Yeah. And all of a sudden Ulfie makes a you effing drunk. How does it feel to be out of rehab? And I'm going like, no.
No.
So I actually, when we got back to the bench, I said, Ulfie, you're on your own in this one.
Yeah.
Like
I'm not jumping
in. That was kind of dumb and I am not getting involved in that.
Yeah.
But Ulfie was great. We were losing about 9-2 in Hartford one game. There's about 30 seconds left in the game, and Tex Evans is our coach.
Is it Mike Liut or Peter Skorkowicz?
No, it was Mike Liut.
Yeah.
And he's going down the wing or whatever, and the puck gets chipped up in the air, and he grabs it with his hand. He's right beside the net and, like, fakes the goalie to the far corner and stuffs it in this one.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you guys remember the brass bonanza they used to play. So, you know, everyone's going crazy. Now it's 9-3. There's 38 seconds left in the game. Tex was not impressed, right? Ulfie's laughing. He's coming back to the bench. That was just him, right? It's like, well, we'll play again tomorrow.
Yeah. That brass bonanza, that's so good.
I didn't know any different.
No. You played Joel Quenneville.
Yep. Yeah. I actually sat beside Joel in the dressing room my first year.
He'd been around for a while by that point, eh?
Yeah. I'm going to guess that he was about 28, 29 at that time. And things were different, I think, back then. You only carried 20 players on a team, so when you're a draft pick, it doesn't matter, you know, where you got drafted. If you stay with the team, you took someone's job.
Yeah.
Right? So I was pretty quiet, just kept to myself. But they drafted Sylvain Côté the year before and Sylvain Turgeon the year before that. And they were quite happy to have a Western Canadian hockey player. They didn't have much for toughness there.
Yep.
And so they were excited to get some size. I didn't realize how that would work against me. But
yeah, you're open for the challenge.
But no, I just played hard and tried to, you know, learn and grow and do whatever. And it actually took till about the 10th game till I got my first fight during the regular season. And my first fight was Dave Richter. And my second fight that game was Willie Platt.
Oh, nice call, Hank.
Wow.
You playing mini?
I wasn't. In Hartford. But it's the old, like, I didn't know who Dave Richter was.
Left-handed.
Yeah, well, you found that out in a hurry. But it's one of those, you know, when you survive and you don't die in that fight, then you go, oh, okay.
Yeah.
And I think Willie was a bit beat up by then. He had a bad shoulder and stuff.
Yeah.
Cross-checked him in front of the net, and he tried to spear me right in the face. So I thought, okay, you better drop your gloves. I don't want to get in a stick fight. And then after that, I kind of really started fitting in with the team. And Joel, like, I remember my first game was in Buffalo. And it just happened to be Jill Perreault's 1,100th career game. So Tex Evans comes in the dressing room and says, okay, you know, on forward, we're starting this. And then he looked at me and said, kid, you might as well get your feet wet. You're starting. And I was like, oh, my God, great. You know, like, you're excited.
Yeah.
So we go out on the ice, and you're jacked up. You're skating around and everything. Okay, line up for the anthems. And before the anthems, they go, ladies and gentlemen, Jill Perreault's 1,100th career game. And the whole Boston auditorium gave him about a six-minute standing ovation. And I'm standing there going, can we get this started? Like, this isn't helping the anxiety right now.
Oh, yeah.
10 minutes later.
Yeah. that's a memory I'll never forget.
You got 125 penalty minutes your first year, too.
Yeah. Well, when you get drafted to a team that has been in the bottom of their division for maybe 9-10 years, getting basically beat up physically and on the scoreboard, the first thing all the other teams do is, okay, they got a kid that, let's discourage him.
Yeah.
So you have to stand up for yourself.
Yeah.
Right? And once you do, you know, like...
could create some room.
Yeah. Well, they leave you alone. Like, then there's no reason to fight them. Like,
well, then they know you'll go. So then if you really want to push them, then they know you'll fight.
Yeah.
So not everybody wants to fight. They like to bluff, right?
And you know, back in that era, that was part of the game, and that was one way to... get an edge if you could.
Yep.
So a lot of that was basically just trying to defend myself. It wasn't like I was out there trying to make a name for myself, that's for sure.
Your second year with the Whale, you ended up going to playoffs too, hey? How far did you make it?
Well, the first year, we actually, that was 86, and we made the playoffs. I think it was like the last game or two of the year.
Yeah.
And ended up playing the Nordiques. It was still best of five.
Yeah.
They had the Stashneys.
The best of five.
Goulet.
First round only.
Yeah. And we ended up knocking off the Nordiques. They were first in the division.
Wow.
The second round, we played Montreal, and we took them to seven games and lost. I think it was double overtime.
Yeah.
Lemieux scored not a great goal, but it's a goal.
Yeah.
Claude? So,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, Claude the door. Yeah. And then it was reversed the next year. I think we finished first in the division that year and lost to the Nordiques first round.
Yeah.
And that was kind of tough because say what you want about Mike Liut, but he didn't help us much that year.
Yeah.
We got scored on the first shot on goal in 4 of 6 games. And on the second shot on goal in 5 of 6 or something like that. And the worst was we're in Hartford, and they win the puck back to Randy Moeller.
Yeah.
He takes 2 strides and slaps it off the end boards, and Ludi came out to play it, and it hit his pads and went in the net. So it's like 1957 of the first period, and we're down 1-0. It's just everyone on the bench going, what?
Oh, what just that? Happened?
What's going on here, right?
That's so good. Poor guy. Poor guy. Was Sidorkiewicz on the team too, or no? Or was that after?
Sid was around, but we had Steve Weeks.
Oh.
Steve Weeks was our backup goalie, but
yeah.
And he was a good great guy.
Good in the room.
Quiet. Oh, really? Didn't even know he was in the room.
Really?
But yeah, he was
a backup goalie, eh?
Yeah.
Huh. Yeah, lesson for a lot
might want to take that one back.
Right? Yeah.
So your next year with Hartford, you were there for what, half the season? Well,
no, a whole year. I was there 2.5 years.
Yeah, that's what I mean. So your third season, you played 30 games.
Yeah.
You got traded.
Yeah.
Who did you get traded for?
I got traded for, it was myself and Shane Cherla.
Yep.
For Kerry Wilson, Neil Sheehy, and the rights to Lane McDonald, a U.S. Olympian.
Did you say Lane McDonald?
Yeah.
Lane, yeah.
Yeah.
That's a tough one. That's a tough one for me.
I don't know him.
No, I didn't know. I always thought that was a joke. You know what I mean? It's like Lane McDonald. It's like, is that what you call Lanny? Yeah.
Lane. No,
have one McDonald on the team per team.
Yeah.
What was that day like? Did you care?
Sure. Yeah. Well, of course. You know, like, I don't know. For me, you get drafted to a team. You know, you've had some success. You feel you're getting better as a player. And, you know, I'm going to do this, right? I'm going to be part of this. We're going to win a cup, and I'm going to do it. And then next thing you know, you got traded.
Yep.
And instead of thinking, oh, the Flames wanted me, all you think is, I'm not good enough.
Yeah, like,
what
did I didn't want you.
Yeah, what did I do? But it was probably the best thing that happened to me. Coming to Calgary changed. Hockey became more professional for me.
Yep.
You know, we didn't have power play or penalty kill meetings. We had Ronnie Francis would talk to the guys on the power play about who they were up against and what they were going to try and do. And Joel Quenneville would run the penalty kill and say, here's what I think we're going to see. So it didn't say a lot for the coaching back then.
For sure.
I didn't know that at the time.
Yeah.
Right? I got to Calgary. We were on a 2-month road trip because of the Olympics. So it kind of took till we got back to Calgary. And then it was like, okay, Dana, you're not going to play. You always love it when the coach says, you're not going to play in the power play, but we'd like you to sit in the meetings anyways. So I said, okay. Yeah.
We got an extra seat.
But no, like my education in hockey really started.
Yeah.
You know, systems. And
Who was coaching then?
That was Crispy.
Yeah.
I think it was Pierre Page. Was it Baxter?
Yeah.
And Reiser?
Yeah.
That's the ones I remember.
You know what's funny? So I got called up to Dallas. My very first call up to Dallas Stars, and I was just jacked to be there, like just jacked. Dave Tippett, the old teammate of yours, is head coach.
Yep.
And I'm so happy to be there. I'm in the American Airlines Center. It's Dallas Stars. I just moved on from the Flames organization. I was just wired. And there's a meeting, power play, penalty kill meeting. And I wasn't paying attention to what came after the first P. It was just PP, PK. I'm like, well, it's all penalty kill. I'm going to go sit in this meeting. I don't know what I was thinking. We get into the video room, and I sit down, and, you know, there's Mike Modano, there's Sergei Zubov, there's Robida, there's Ribeiro, there's Morrow. These guys kill penalties? That's awesome, right? and I sit down, and Dave Tippett looks at me and goes, Croner? I'm like, hello? Nice to see you. Thank you, right? And everybody's looking at me like, what is wrong with this guy, right? And Modano leans over and goes, the goalies sit in on power play meetings where you come from, kid? And I'm like, this is a power play meeting? I'm like, well, you may as well stay now. Yeah. You can sit here and watch a thing or two.
In case you get traded, you'll know what we're up to.
Exactly, right? So who told you were traded?
Joel Quenneville.
Oh, jeez.
So we actually had a game, and I got back to my house. It was about 11:30, 12. And my girlfriend Kim at the time was down visiting. Actually, she was my fiance by then.
Fiance.
So she was down for Christmas and New Year's. So this was January 2nd we played the game. And Joel was still downtown after press close. Like they couldn't release any more stories in the papers or anything. So Emil told Jeff Jacobs, the one reporter in Hartford, that he made a trade. And it was me and Charles or whatever. So I remember Kim and I sitting in our house, and all of a sudden there's like a Ford Bronco or Jimmy or something doing donuts in my backyard. And I'm going, who the hell's that? Well, it was Tori Robertson. So then Tori comes in the house and goes, he's got a bottle of Perrier Jouet champagne.
And he says, good?
Yeah, actually, it is good. It is good.
Yeah.
You know, back then it was probably $80 a bottle. That's a big deal. Yeah. US.
Now it's like 10 grand.
Well, maybe not.
Maybe not.
And then I noticed there was another vehicle pulling the driveway. His Tori came in and said, you're traded. You're going home, kid. You got to be happy, aren't you? And I was like, what?
Yeah.
And then Joel came in and said, yeah, no, the deal's done. You're going to Calgary.
And Joel was still playing, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. He was our assistant captain.
That? Yeah.
Yeah. So we...
Reg Dunlop.
We proceeded to drink champagne till about 3 in the morning. And then I showed up for practice. That's a funny story, too, because Paul Lawless, we were roommates the first year. So we showed up and we're walking in together. And, yeah, sure enough, there's Skip Cunningham, the equipment manager, goes, oh, Dana, he says, go see Emil. Well, Lolly was a little hungover, too, and he heard, go see Emil. So I walk in the room, and I don't even know he's behind me. And Emil says, come on in, shut the door. And then he goes, what the fuck are you doing in here? And Lolly looks at him, oop, turns around and walks out.
Imagine that.
That's so good.
And then, he let me know. He shook my hand, said thanks very much for everything. He says, as you know, we were not doing very good. Like Emil the trader.
Yeah.
If things weren't going well, when he was in St. Louis or Hartford or whatever, when you hit a bump in the road and the team started malfunctioning, someone's leaving.
Yeah.
Right? He didn't hesitate. And, I guess as it turns out, Flames watched me play junior here in town and everything else and thought it was worth it. So I met the team in Chicago. Gooley picked me up, Glenn Hall.
Yeah.
Oh. I think it was Glenn Hall and Skaggs. He met me at Chicago Airport.
Skaggs?
Yeah.
Drove me down to the... to the rink, to the stadium, because it was only like 2:30 in the afternoon. But
was Glenn Hall working for the Flames, or why?
Yeah, he was a goalie coach.
Well, yeah, right? Yeah. I gathered that from talking to Vernie.
So he'd go on certain road trips, You know, obviously Chicago was one, and St. Louis would be another one because he played there.
Yeah, and I didn't know like that was a big deal because I wasn't a big hockey historian.
Yeah.
So once I figured out who Glenn Hall was and the fact that he came to the airport to meet me and welcome me to the team, I was pretty impressed. And then I just remember going and sitting in the basement there for a couple hours, said hi to the trainers, get your gear and sit in your stall and waited till everyone got there. And that's always awkward.
Yeah.
Hi. You know, cross-checked, you know, whatever. And then you don't know where you fit with this team, right? But they put me with Al right away. First game I played as Al's partner. And it was different. Like in Hartford, pretty much a self-coached team. And then I come to Calgary. And there was no anxiety whatsoever during the game. So we went out there, and I think we were down 2-0 after the first period. And I'm kind of like, there's... didn't seem to be much emotion in the room to me for what I was used to.
Yep.
More veteran team, Hartford, very young team. I was like, okay, well, see how this goes. And we go out the next period and, oh, power play. We score.
Yep.
2-1. Wait a little longer. Power play. Oh, we score. I'm going, wow, that's power play.
Yeah.
You know, McInnes, Suter, Nui, Mully, everybody, right? So I was like, holy crap, now I know why they're not too anxious, right? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And we ended up winning 4-2 or 5-2, and the rest is kind of history, just kind of. But that Calgary is where I became a defensive defenseman.
Yeah.
We got back from that big road trip, and we played Buffalo. So being in the Adams division back then, you're used to Buffalo. You know the team. You know, I'm starting to get comfortable. And I get the puck behind their net, swinging, and I wheel it. I wheel it all the way down, and I actually got a really good scoring chance. Yeah. So I'm like in back of your head, busting my butt back to the bench, and I'm thinking, there you go, Hank. There you go. You're showing them. Now you're going, right? And as I'm coming on into the bench, all three coaches, like you never see the forward coach, they're all down there, and they go,
what the hell was that? And I was all excited, and I go, that's awesome, isn't it? And they go, it's not awesome. Pass the puck to Al, or pass the puck to a forward, and get behind Al. And I went, okay.
I got it.
That was pretty straightforward.
It is funny, though. Like, back in the day, you know, you played your role. If you stepped outside it, somebody was there to tap you back in.
Get back in your lane.
What are you doing improving?
What are you doing scoring a goal?
Are you thinking for yourself? Wait a second. No, that's not allowed here. You are a robot. Let's go to work. So when you got to Calgary, Crispy was a coach, right?
Yep.
What was that like for you coming with Terry?
It was fine. Like, you know, I never really got talked to by coaches my whole career. Like, you just, if you did your job, they'd leave you alone.
And you didn't want to talk to them, right?
No. Like, I was never a guy up in the office or any of that stuff. Like, So it was fine. You know, I was young enough that I didn't really realize how it affected our team and what was going on there in the dynamics, right?
Yeah.
And I got to give credit to our assistant coaches because they were, our systems were good.
Yeah.
You know, and they prepped us for the other teams and everything else. And to me, Crispy was more of a cheerleader.
Yeah.
Like, you know, he had oversight on everything and could, he walks down and tells Baxter, Dana's not playing anymore. Dana doesn't play anymore.
Yeah.
But he didn't do that much.
Yeah.
You know, I thought he ran a decent bench and everything else. And you know, I didn't see him get too emotional for quite a while. Once in a while, he'd kind of lose it on the bench and stuff. And
as a player, it's
almost entertaining, right? Like, you know he's mad and you know everything else, but everyone's kind of got their head down, chuckling a little bit.
You got your mouth and your chest protected. You just pull it up.
Towel. So,
then you start thinking, what's he saying about me when I'm on the ice?
Wow. So we'd run into some injuries or whatnot, and I was playing. Me and Brian Glenn ended up playing together in Winnipeg on an afternoon game, and they literally dropped the puck to start the game, and it's the old "I had my man," of course. Story, but,
I know, I've heard that before.
But they go down and right by Glenner, and they score, and it's 1-0. And you're going, oh, that's tough. Sometimes these afternoon games, you know, we're off the ice. We go out for our second shift of the period, and I don't exactly remember how it happens, but Glenner got undressed again, and it's 2-0.
You had your man, Hank.
I did. Yeah. I did. I was right in front watching it all. And then we ended up -3 the first period. So I'm prepared to go back to the dressing room and get my berating talked to, and then maybe not play anymore. That's not the case. Crispy doesn't say a word. No one says a word. We go out for the second period. Me and Glenn are starting. I'm going, wow, that's a lot of confidence coach has on us. And right before they drop the puck, the arena tends to get really quiet.
Yeah.
Right when it gets really quiet, Crispy screams at Glenner, Glenner, get your head out of your ass. And they drop the puck, and they go down, and they go right by us again, and they score. We're -4, and that was our last shift. So I'm not sure I'd take that approach with a younger player. You know what I mean?
Yeah, give him a chance. That's so good.
So, Hank, when we were on this long road trip, Dana joins the team, and we come back to Calgary, and we have this party at my place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, you did.
And so, Kim, this is the first time we meet Kim, Dana's fiance.
My better half.
Yeah.
Arguably the funniest woman ever to be associated with the NHL. And she is at our party, and she's just meeting everybody, right? You think she'd been there for 10 years. It was so funny. I had to give her the volume control.
Is that the same one that Johnny Tinelli was at?
Yeah.
So Johnny just got here, you know, Stanley Cup champ, kind of a big deal. He'd let you know that too.
Yeah.
Really nice shoes. Yeah. And we'll get to that story. But.
Yeah.
So Kim comes over to me. We're all of, 21, 22 years old, something like that. And she walks over to me, had a couple drinks, and kind of goes, who the fuck's that guy? And I said, well, that's Johnny Tinelli. He's kind of a big deal. And she goes, I don't give a shit. What kind of big deal? He's an arrogant prick. Yeah. And I'm going, listen, do me a favor. We just got traded here. Let's
be nice.
Let's just
give him a chance, will you?
Yeah, I'm sure he's great. Yeah.
Well, I almost had to step between the two of them halfway through the night, and then Kim tends to elevate a little bit when she drank back then.
Yeah.
And that's when we came up with the reverse peace sign for volume control. Yeah. So when she was getting loud, I could just give her that across the room, and she'd like tone her down a little. Yeah.
And then when she'd go at Hank, I would go, volume control. Yeah. Volume.
Bring it up.
Yeah.
Bring it up.
Yeah, let's go. Amp. That's so good. Yeah. Oh, that's so good. Oh, so you get to Calgary. Your second season with the Flames, play 63 games, 22 points, 142 penalty minutes. Talk about that season, from the start of the season.
My first full year here.
Yeah, you bet.
You
guys were favorites to. Were you guys favorites to win that year, or you were?
Yeah, I think we won the President's Trophy that year, and then
was that the year we won the Cup?
No, it was the next year.
You won the President's Trophy the year before. You won the Cup the following season.
Yeah. Okay. Well, my learning experience continued, but we had a great team.
Yeah.
Right? And so I played my limited role. I didn't play any power play.
Who's your D partner?
Al McInnes.
Yeah. Al McInnes.
So I'd do regular shifts with Al. I'd kill penalties with Al, and I'd watch power plays, which was fine. And I just remember being a part of a group of guys that just felt like we were going to win every night.
Yeah.
You know, it was a belief, right? Yeah. Like, you know, and everybody trusted each other, counted on each other. And we were good. Like, there's no other way to put it. We were a good team. You know, we had the guys up north that were a good team right? And we knew what we'd have to do if we wanted to go farther. We lost to them that year in playoffs, didn't we?
We lost to...
That was the year I got traded here. We lost to Edmonton.
Yeah, I think the next year we lost to Winnipeg. Yeah, we should have beat them, I go, but... Yeah.
I don't remember a whole lot about that year, to be honest with you. If I got to go back and think about it, it's kind of uneventful. And it's probably because we didn't do that well in playoffs.
Yeah.
You know, personally, I think I was becoming a better player. You know, it takes a bit of time in the NHL and finding your place and everything. Where my memory really kicks in is that year we won the Cup.
Yeah.
You know, and same thing. Like, we just, every game we played, we kind of expected to win.
Yeah. Who was your favorite hockey player growing up?
Favorite hockey player growing up?
Yeah.
I had three.
Okay.
Okay, because when I played road hockey, I started in Ottawa, you'd always get the Montreal games, Toronto games, and Philly. Yep. Philly was pretty good back then, Broad Street Bullies and everything. And I don't know why, but I wanted to be Bernie Perrant when I played net, right? I'm playing net in road hockey, I'm Bernie Perrant. And... I don't know why, but I love Reggie Leach.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, like he just come down and cranks, you know, like he score or whatever. And I like the look out there.
Yeah.
And growing up in Ottawa, we didn't like Montreal.
No.
But I couldn't help but really like Larry Robinson, the big bird.
Yeah.
He was definitely by far my favorite player.
Yeah.
And it's pretty cool because he was that good that I ended up playing against him for most of my career.
Yeah.
Because he was still playing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I'm talking... That would have been 10 years after I seen him.
Yeah.
So I just loved him. No helmet.
Yeah.
Just solid. Yeah. Right? Just solid. Could do everything. Rush puck end in, fight with everybody. Just to me, he was the full package.
Yeah.
What was it like lining up against him on the ice?
Fun. Yeah. Well, it was a big deal for me, right? Yeah. Like, you know, it's right, but at the same time, like when we played them in the finals, at one point I was choking out Russ Court. And I ended up playing with Russ. We laughed about this, but I didn't know it. I had an arm lock around his head. Yeah. You're so jacked up, I actually had his feet off the ground. And he goes, I couldn't breathe.
Yeah.
And Larry saw that and came over and grabbed me, like enough, right?
Yeah.
And so they break everybody else up because they always leave the big guys holding each other because they think they'll be okay.
Yeah.
And Andy Van Hilleman was the ref, and he skated over, and we were giving it the FU back and forth.
Yeah.
And he goes, if you guys don't stop, you both got 10. Well, that's a pretty good trade for the Calgary Flames. If I could take the big bird off, so I ramped it up, right? Yeah. And Andy looked at me and said, okay, enough, knock it off. I'm not doing this. He knew too, right? I'm not doing this. Yeah. Not in this series.
Yeah. Yeah. That's all.
Ding, 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 ding. I got a great idea.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, you know, like, Larry was a fair player.
Yeah.
Like, probably one of the toughest guys to ever play the game, but I didn't think of him as a cheap player at all.
No, like, he never abused it, right?
Nope.
He was just a good, honest, hard-working player.
And he could deal with it.
Yeah.
Back to the Ray Neufelds of the world. He would deal with things when he had to.
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
And it was well known.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
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 And for a big man, he carried the puck well and skated well. And, yeah, he did everything.
Yep.
Well, and there you have it. That is this week's episode of the program. Great stories with Dana Merzen, 1989 Stanley Cup champion, and just over 200 games as a member of the Flames. As we start to wrap things up on this week's edition of the Cumming & Gillespie LLP Flames Alumni Chronicles, Cumming & Gillespie LLP personal injury and medical malpractice lawyers committed to getting maximum compensation for the injured and their families. Visit Cumming Gillespie.com. Thanks to Dana Merzen. Thanks to Brent Cron. And thanks to Colin Patterson. Thanks to the Garrison Pub for hosting us, as always, when we do the recordings. My name is Pat Steinberg, and we will talk to you on next week's episode.